The technocrats are coming to your rural town to operate the AI data center that's under construction. We at the Rural Fund aim to make that a good thing. Hi, welcome to Bring Back the Bustle, a podcast about revitalizing rural America. I'm Siobhan Jones, your host. Today, the topic is class, socioeconomic class, how to appeal to and mesh economically mixed groups within a single small community. The premise for this discussion is the fact that AI data centers are poised to become anchor businesses that can revive rural communities left destitute when manufacturing plants exited in search for cheaper labor abroad. There's a good way and a bad way of introducing city slickers into rural America. The good way revives the region, redevelops downtown districts, and brings renewed energy, optimism, and economic stability for all. The bad way results in two cities of haves and have-nots living a stone's throw away from each other. Some of you may remember John Singleton's movie Higher Learning. If not, it's a good watch. You can download it or stream it and get an idea of what I'm talking about. It's about a college in the middle of a community of poorly educated people. It's an example of resentment and uneasy relations between the two populations. No one would design a community that way on purpose, but a lack of planning will lead to that result almost as easily as if it had been intended. So this episode is about assimilating technocrats into rural communities. Assimilation is a two-way street. The natives give a little, and the transplants make an even bigger adjustment, as it should be, because they're coming into the community. This topic of rural life will cover assimilation from both points of view. First, we'll look at it from the viewpoint of the existing residents who have been living a certain way, good or bad, and actually it's good and bad, but they've been doing that for a long time, and all of a sudden, the technocrats are coming and bringing uncertainty and change. Then, we'll look at assimilation from the viewpoint of transplanted workers moving to the boondocks. In some ways, moving from San Francisco or Seattle to a rural community hundreds of miles from a metropolis is even more different or jarring than moving from San Francisco to a foreign city like Paris or Rio de Janeiro. There's a language barrier and a lifestyle barrier that's just as pronounced. The TV show Green Acres was before my time, but I get the concept, I get the premise. You're talking about people who are as different as night and day, but you're beginning a marriage and you have to make it work. So it's a story of compromise and measured change. Notice, I ended both of those points of view with the word change. That was purposeful because assimilation is about change. When a new company comes to town, the locals experience mixed emotions. Some are optimistic that there will be more money and opportunity. Those are usually the young people who are college educated or college bound. Another group that views an influx as an opportunity are property owners or small business owners, because they see new customers to rent or buy from them. But people who don't own businesses or have educations view change differently. They're afraid of getting left out or left behind when opportunities are being made available. They fear that whatever good things are coming to town aren't intended for them. The new jobs are not something that they can do. The new activities aren't something they can afford or perhaps are even interested in. They hear about everything through the rumor mill rather than through communication from their elected officials. So they can't imagine how they fit in and often don't believe that anyone is thinking about them at all. They are convinced that with this change, they're going to remain as invisible as they were before the change even occurred. Almost none of the rural people, not even the optimistic ones, believe that the newcomers want to be a part of their community or their culture. They believe fancy, educated people, the city folks, look down on them. Some of them look forward to an opportunity to put those uppity people in their place or to show you that you're not better than them and that this is their community. where you're just a guest. On some level, one of the reasons that there's a backlash against, one of the reasons, just one of them, that there's a backlash against immigration in America is because some groups don't assimilate well. They bring their own culture to America and don't take the time to pick up on the American culture. Now, that's just one reason that there's some immigration backlash, but that just gives you an opportunity to understand it from the same viewpoint that the locals are experiencing it. To mitigate these negative attitudes, it's important that the guests, the technocrats, understand rural culture. Culture tends to depend on the region and the weather. Small northern and midwestern towns have a culture around family and snow and ice. They ski, they ice skate, they ice fish, and so on. They drive vehicles that perform well in the snow, that have chains on the tires. They are kind and polite to everyone, but they're not quite as friendly to strangers as Southerners. You know, Northerners aren't known for Southern hospitality. Southerners are, right? I think that's because they're cold. You don't have time to stand around chatting outside when tears are freezing on your face. They instead spend a lot of time inside with their nuclear families, the people who live in the house with them. And when they are outside, they're moving around. Like I said, they're skating or skiing or sledding or doing something to stay warm. Or they're walking quickly so that they can get inside. That's a very different culture than what exists in rural Southern towns. In the South, it's about God, country, and sports. That is the culture. Rural Southerners are religious. Churches are as common as liquor stores, one on every corner. They're into sports, they fish, they hunt, they ride all-terrain vehicles. They drive pickup trucks and spin mud everywhere. Southern rurals tend to be neighborly. Everyone speaks to everyone, often multiple times a day. So if you take your dog for a walk and you pass by Mrs. Johnson, you're going to have to talk to Miss Johnson about the plants in her garden, about your dog's favorite treat, about how your family's doing. And then as you go and walk your dog, maybe you stop and get an ice cream. 45 minutes later, you're going to pass back by. If Miss Johnson is still on her porch, you have to have another conversation with her. And if you don't want to have another conversation, you need to take a different route home, because the culture is to talk to people every time you see them. I sometimes take a different route home. Some rural Southerners occasionally visit fancy cities in the United States or take a trip to Europe, but they don't envy that life. While a city slicker like myself and my friends tend to get melancholy toward the end of a month-long trip abroad, after a week, the typical Southerner is tired of all the hooey and just wants to get back home. In a sense, rural Southerners cling to their guns and their religion, just as one of our former presidents so aptly pointed out. In both the rural North and the rural South, there may not be a huge art scene for a number of reasons. Lack of financial support from the community or a community large enough to support the arts is probably at the top of the list. But right under it is a different view of what constitutes art. As you can surmise, one of the reasons is easy to fix. The money issue is easy to fix. But the other, the different views of what's art, is not maybe fixable. Because one of you has an oil painting over the fireplace and the other has taxidermy. There also aren't a lot of finicky eaters in the rural South, or really in any rural community. So the vegans and the vegetarians, there's not a real place for you in rural America. Rural people eat off the land, so it's a protein-heavy diet. They didn't kill that buck just to make taxidermy art. They ate it. So if you're an atheist who plays video games instead of going outside and getting dirty, and the only time you eat animal flesh is at a sushi restaurant, think of the culture shock that you're going to be in for when you move to rural America. Another way change can be upsetting when technocrats come to town is in respect to the cost of living. Because wages are lower in rural America, things cost less. As business people, we get that, right? We understand that you have to price your product to move. So nearly everything is priced affordably in rural towns. Of course, what's affordable to a city slicker is different than what's affordable to locals living on fixed incomes. I was visiting my mother after her surgery last winter. I took my car with me because I didn't want to hear her mouth about my driving her car too often. My mother has a guy in the neighborhood who comes to wash her car from time to time. So I asked him to wash mine and I paid him $20. I felt like I had gotten a steal because he did a really good job and I got it for $15 cheaper than in Miami where I paid $35. My mom heard that I paid him $20 and said, and got a little upset because the locals usually pay $10. And I'd come in town and driven up the price of a car wash. So the next time I got my car washed, I negotiated it down to $15. That's now the new price of a car wash. I single-handedly increased the price of a car wash by 50% from $10 to $15. That's not a huge problem for locals because having someone else hand wash your car is a luxury. But what about when you're driving up the price of rental housing by 50 or 60% the way data center construction workers have done? Housing is a necessity. So before I end this episode, I'm going to suggest ways to address the cost of living problem created when technocrats relocate to rural communities. But first, let me introduce technocrats to some of the hiccups of rural life. In a nutshell, normal conveniences, the things that you're used to, are missing. And it is unspeakably boring in rural America, especially at night. Case in point, I'm a Miamian for more than 20 years now. I take for granted more than just the beautiful beaches here in Miami. I'm accustomed to having anything I want within a few miles of my home. Even the lack of highbrow cultural experiences that used to characterize Miami has largely been remedied because the New Yorkers came down during the pandemic about 5 years ago, and they brought cultural experiences with them because they were missing that part of New York. But in my mom's small town, which is near an AI data center currently under construction, by the way, the lack of basic conveniences is palpable. There isn't an Epicurean market for 100 miles. You heard me right. You have to drive 100 miles to get to the nearest fresh market. And Whole Foods is even further away than that. I remember during my stay craving mushroom risotto. It's one of my favorite dishes. But the only mushroom I could find was Baby Bella's. There were no oyster mushrooms, no shiitake, no trumpet. I couldn't even find chanterelles. And I was in the freaking woods. Now, when I make risotto, I like to use multiple mushrooms with slightly different tastes. And this Baby Bella mushroom came out one-dimensional and disappointing. My craving for churrasco also went unsatisfied because skirt steak is not a cut that's stocked locally. You'd have to drive that 100 miles to get to the fresh market to get skirt steak. Fresh herbs for a chimichurri sauce were also oddly unavailable because the region is a farming region. So I just sat around longing for home. There was nothing to keep me distracted from the annoying inconveniences I just described. There's no movie theater, no spa, no health club, no bowling alley, no sports bar, no skating rink. No arcade, no museum, no pool hall or billiards room, no music venues, no nightclubs, no comedy clubs. The only indoor entertainment is a vice, gambling, which, when you think about it, is noticeably contrary to the God country sports local culture of rural America or the southern part of rural America. The gambling shacks are exactly what should not be in rural America. Because all they do is take. You have to pay for your drinks at a rural gambling shack. Even as you're sitting there gambling away your paycheck, they won't even give you a beverage. The Gambling Shack ATM fees are as much as $6 to get money that you really can't afford to spend. Moreover, only a couple of low-paying part-time jobs are created by a gambling shack, so it does nothing for the community. There are things that can be done to better rural communities. As a low-hanging fruit, since it's easy to do, technocrats can throw consistent work and consistent business to help locals adjust. You need to buy and overpay for not more than you would pay in the town you come from, but more than is required for this local town. You need to buy and overpay for laundry service, catering services, housekeeping services, lawn service, handyman services. Someone clean your gutters, let someone else do it, even if you know how. And yes, car washing services. Overpay for all of that. Buy it from the locals so that they can stay afloat during a period of rapid change for them. Shop at mom and pop stores rather than ordering from Amazon, which you'll have to wait a couple days to get your stuff anyway, or going to the local Walmart, which can survive without your money. There are certain things that you normally do online, such as buying home or car insurance. These things are still done through local agents in rural towns. That's a job down there. And the price of the policy is the same. You just have a personal contact to help you when something bad happens. So you're getting more for your money if you do business with your local folks rather than doing business online. There's something investors and data centers owners can do as well. We can develop a variety of facilities, a variety of venues, and position them in central locations rather than building right around the data center and focusing solely on facilities intended for the technocrats. And we can support the local public school system, even if our children aren't going to attend it. Let me talk about those two points in more detail. The community needs to be integrated in some ways. People from different classes and or different backgrounds should see each other more places than the church. You need to get a beer in the same bars. You need to be in the audience to watch the same musical act. You need to have Sunday brunch at the same hotel or restaurant. While there will be some facilities that different groups aren't interested in or can't afford, there also must be some common experiences. That common experience was once provided by the former Friday Night Lights culture, where everyone in town went to the high school football game on Fridays. Friday Night Lights anchored rural social life from the 1980s through the 2000s, but it's no longer the case because that culture is being decimated by laws that shift public education funding to charter and private schools. If communities abandon the public school system, we will create that higher learning tension that I talked about earlier. At a much earlier age or an earlier time than when people reach college, it's going to permeate life from the beginning. So if you place your kids in private school, you need to pay for it yourself or make a donation toward public school extracurricular activities or books and materials. Now, there's no art in public schools. There's no band anymore to speak of in some of these rural public schools. The cheerleading and dance teams are hollowed out. And the only thing students get to learn, for the most part, is the trades, not civics or social studies or anything that, or literature. You don't have to be college bound to be able to understand how government works or be able to read the paper and keep up with what's going on in your community. So we need to support these public schools if we're going to take our students out of them. The stakes are high. If we get community development right, we'll create thriving, economically mixed rural communities, similar to what exists in large cities that merge different classes of people, all serving and engaging with one another. A city like Miami We have poor people, we have middle class people, we have upper class people, and we have billionaires. And we all engage with each other on some level. By comparison, if we get community redevelopment wrong, we're going to create resegregation. Here at the fund, at the Rural Fund, we are focused on servicing economically diverse communities, as well as on creating permanent jobs that pay a living wage so our workers can transact business with their neighbors. Transacting business with neighbors is the norm in rural communities. We understand that the more customers we have, the more money we'll earn. Rural communities already have low populations, so creating businesses that serve only a small subset of the community can be a recipe for unprofitability. We look at rural markets the way the fashion industry looks at the clothing market. A brand like Ralph Lauren makes high-end offerings sold in private boutiques and better department stores, but it also makes lower-cost items that are available in stores like Macy's and TJ Maxx. Even ultra-exclusive brands like Balmain will offer a $5,000 blazer alongside a $200 t-shirt. They don't leave money on the table. They allow the customer to start at an entry level and grow with the brand. For us at the Rural Fund, we might have a restaurant that offers a $50 weekend brunch for our more well-heeled customers while serving a $12 American breakfast every other day of the week, ensuring that we meet the customer where they are. And by the way, everyone likes to save money. That weekend brunch customer will also buy the $12 breakfast during the week, making our restaurant an integrated venue and hopefully a community hotspot. So I invite data center owners to visit our website and read more about how we help you assimilate your workforce into rural communities so that they enjoy a positive employee experience. I'm Siobhan Jones. Oh, wait. The website is www.ruralqrof.com. That's www.ruralqrof.com for a qualified rural opportunity fund. I am Siobhan Jones. I will be here again next week talking about rural revitalization. I'm looking forward to it, and I hope you are too.